Okay, good afternoon. We are now coming back to a group of PowerPoint slides, which we did already use several lessons ago. At the time, we went very quickly through this group of slides. Now, instead, we need to understand everything and to go into the mathematical details of some operation like convolution, digital filtering, fast Fourier transform, etc. So this is the topics of the lesson today are particularly important for engineers and particularly engineers of the group of electronics, telecommunication and information technology. For the other kind of engineers, they are not so important to understand the mathematical detail of this operation. What is important to understand are the limits of this operation, particularly the limits of the Fourier transform analysis. The Fourier transform is usually widely employed in many different sciences, including statistics, economics, and so on, but usually the limitation for being able to use the fast Fourier analysis are not clearly explained, and if you don't meet these constraints, the Fourier transform produce errors, and this error can be misleading and cause significant bias in the evaluation you are doing, employing it as an analysis tool, and you make wrong filtering if you are employing FFT for processing a signal, not necessarily an audio signal. It is well known, for example, that the wrong usage of this advanced signal processing technology applied to economics caused a lot of trouble in the stock exchange when they attempted to employ signal analysis technology to the variation of the stock value or of the foreign exchange value, and they did burn their fingers with the wrong extrapolation and wrong assumption because those people in the economic area don't know anything about the mathematical theory which is behind this approach. It did look quite normal to treat these signals as any other kind of signal which changes over time, but instead there are some assumptions, in particular for the fast Fourier transform, there is the assumption of periodicity, which don't necessarily hold in other fields. In acoustic, there are some conditions where the periodicity assumption can be thought to be true, or we can force the signal to a false periodicity for forcing it to be true. But if you don't do that, the Fourier transform is wrong. Okay? So we skip over the part which we did already investigate 6 or 7 lessons ago, and we go straight to the part which needed to be understood better. We have understood already how sampling an analog signal produce two kinds of error, one a long time domain where the continuous time is discretized at finite steps delta tau, and those steps must be small enough comparing with the period. So in the worst case, you need to sample at least 2 values per each period. This is the Shannon theorem. And also in amplitude, you need to have enough digital resolution of your numbers. You are sampling with integer number, and the accuracy of this integer number is given by the number of bits. Here you see the Shannon theorem. The Shannon theorem states that the sampling rate must be at least twice the maximum frequency in the signal being sampled. For human acoustics, our maximum frequency is 20 kHz, so you should sample the signal at least at 20 kHz. In reality, a microphone pick sound up to much higher frequency. So even if you don't hear higher frequency, there are those high frequency in the real world. For example, CCTV, the tube cathodic monitors of all the television set or all computers, did they typically a scanning frequency of the electronic beam on the screen, which was around 27 kHz, which is definitely ultrasonics and not audible. Can you fill up the evaluation sheet, please? And those kind of frequency are often found in domestic appliances like microwave ovens or other kind of equipment which everyone has in his house. So if you use a microphone in such an environment, you easily find that it is capturing signals which are far above the limit given by the Shannon theorem. For avoiding this problem, it is very important to insert an analog low-pass filter in your sequence. So what we need to apply is a low-pass filter. Now, we did give this as a very simple information in the previous lesson. Now we are going to explore better what is aliasing, how the things happen to behave when you are doing aliasing on your signal. We've started, so now at this point, with our Adobe Audition software, but any sound editor is fine at this point. And we just create a... What's happened here? Wow, terrible. The screen is completely unformatted. I don't really understand why. Ah, okay, now it's better. So we generate... because I have both the spectrum and the time signal, excuse me. Okay, here we have the spectrum. Let me make this as small as possible. Okay, we generate a sine sweep, our preferred signal for doing this kind of test. And we generate this signal with a very high sampling frequency, let me say 96 kHz. Okay. We make a sweep starting at 1 kHz and going up to the Nyquist frequency, which is 48 kHz. 10 seconds long should be enough. Number of cycles, 2, it's okay. So here you see the signal in time domain, here you see the signal in frequency domain. As I move the cursor, you see the instantaneous frequency going higher and higher and higher. Let me look to just one of those sweeps. We can also look at it in spectral way. Okay? So you see the frequency going up. Try to play this signal. Okay. Now it is not audible anymore because we are far above 20 kHz. So as the signal exceeds 20 kHz, we don't hear it anymore. Now the frequency range here go up 10 kHz, 20, 30, 48 is the maximum frequency. Let me play again, and everyone raise your hands, please, when you don't hear the signal anymore. I try to make it as loud as possible. One moment. Okay. Okay, everything is at maximum now. Let me try. You raise your hand when you don't hear it anymore. Okay. So the signal went far at higher frequency in the ultrasonic field when we don't hear it anymore. Now the system is working with a sampling frequency of 96 kHz. If now we halve, we resample this signal running with the software running at a lower sampling rate, we should see the aliasing. Of course, we need to open another software for doing the sampling. Let me try employing, for example, Audacity, which is another waveform editor which we can use for recording sound. Audacity, this one. Okay. We now set Audacity for recording at 48 kHz, the normal sampling frequency, instead of 96. So now the Nyquist frequency for Audacity is at 24 kHz, not 48. We play the signal from Audition and we record the response from Audacity. What I would like to do is to record directly the output of the sound card through the input, because I am not sure if this microphone can record much above 40 kHz. We make a first attempt. If it doesn't work, we try something different. So we start playing this signal. One moment, let me start here, for example, so we have time to switch on the recording on the other one. Okay, now it is recording. It is saturating. We need to reduce something. Probably the output. There is no need that you hear it so loud. So let me repeat the recording here. Throw away this one. This is stereo. We probably can just record mono. Quindi edit preference, recording device, recording 1 mono. Ok, let's try again. Play on this one, record on this one. Ok, in the second part the signal went very small. Let's look at it as a spectrogram. What happened here? It's not so nice. However, what happens usually is that when you reach your new Nyquist frequency, which is 24 kHz, the frequency, instead of continuing going up, starts coming down, and you see here very weak this coming down folded mirror spectrum. What happens is that whenever the frequency exceeds the boundary of the Nyquist frequency, which is half of the sampling frequency, it bounces back. So if the signal is 28 kHz, the boundary was 24, it is 4 kHz above the limit, it comes back at 4 kHz below the limit. At every instant, the frequency of the signal above the Nyquist frequency is mirrored, is folded back in the audible spectrum at a frequency which is the Nyquist frequency minus the exceedance. The exceedance is how much your tone was above the Nyquist frequency. This phenomenon is called aliasing, and the folded back tone is called an aliased or mirrored signal. What does this mean? That inside your recording sale, li può prendere. Qualcun altro è arrivato. Prego. Even if you don't hear anything above 20 kHz, if there was signal which was sampled digitally with not enough sampling rate and without anti-aliasing filtering, what happens is that in your recording, if you listen to the recording, you hear those artifacts. So the signal which was above the Nyquist frequency comes back below and becomes audible. So it disrupts completely, it ruins, it destroys your digital recording. So you must absolutely avoid aliasing, even if it is signal much above your hearing capability, and so you could think, oh, I don't care, there is signal up to 30 kHz, but I don't hear it, aliasing is not a problem for me. It is, because a signal at 30 kHz comes back, it is 6 kHz above the Nyquist frequency, so it falls back to 18 kHz, 6 kHz below the Nyquist frequency. Do you understand the problem? So if you look at the spectrum which is going right, suddenly comes back, it is mirrored back. It is folded back in the audible frequency range. And the only way to avoid this is to apply an anti-aliasing filter. How is an anti-aliasing filter? It's a low-pass filter, and Audition has a very nice filtering tool called Scientific Filter, which provides you with the most common type of filtering, low-pass, high-pass. You see the curve. Low pass leaves the signal go up to a given frequency, and for example we could say up to 20 kHz, and up to 20 kHz it's flat, above 20 kHz it comes down. How much is the slope of this fall down is given by the order of the filter. We will come back later in what means the order of the filter. What I can show you is that a first order filter in a chart like this one produces a very gentle slope. A second order filter, a second order filter is more steep. A third order filter is even steeper, and so on. Roughly, as a first approximation, you can think that every order of filtering means a slope of 6 decibels per octave. It is approximate, it is not exact, but as an order of magnitude, a first order filter produce a fall down, a sloping down curve with a slope of 6 decibel per octave. A second order filter has 12 dB per octave cutting. A fourth order filter, like in this case, is 6 by 4, 24 dB per octave is the average slope of this curve. As you see, it's not a straight line, it's still a curve. So you have to think to this value as an approximate value, okay? But this is the order of magnitude of the falling down you get with this kind of low-pass filter. Of course, you can have also an high-pass, which is the complementary one to the low-pass. So if you have a pair of low-pass and high-pass, you have a pair of filters which divide the frequency spectrum in two parts. The low pass will bring you out the signal for the low frequency, and the high pass will bring you out the signal for high frequency. A pair of matched low pass and high pass filters together are named a crossover. when you have an electronic circuit, which is a crossover, is a frequency divider. A crossover split the signal in two sub-signals, one containing low frequency and one containing high frequency. That is called a crossover. Of course, you can have a bandpass, for example, a bandpass leaving the sound passing only in the band from 1 kHz and 2 kHz, for example. The signal between these two limits is left untouched with 0 dB attenuation. Outside this bandpass, you have two filters. One is a high pass filter and one is a low pass. So you can think to a bandpass like a cascade of a low pass and a high pass. You can have exactly the opposite, which is a band stop or band reaction filter, in which instead the signal is left untouched at every frequency, except within a frequency band where the signal is strongly reduced. This can also be called a notch filter when the two frequencies are very close together. When the two frequencies are very, very close together, you substantially react only a very small portion of the spectrum. This is called a notch filter because it creates a notch inside a flat spectrum. Okay? Again, the order gives you the slope. It was first order, it is more gentle. The higher the order, the more steep will be the boundary of this frequency range constraints, boundaries. It's clear? So, before reducing the sampling frequency of a signal, or before sampling a signal, an analog signal, with a small sampling rate, a sampling rate which would not be large enough for being confirmed along with the Shannon theorem. If the sampling frequency you are using is not large enough, you are going to get aliasing. For avoiding aliasing, you make a good low-pass filter, for example, of 10th order, which is quite steep, at, say, 20 kHz. If I do that to my sine sweep, the high frequency portion of the sine sweep is killed. So now, as you see here, there is no signal anymore. One moment. Let me remove this one and zoom here. It doesn't seem to arrive to 20 kHz. What's happened here? Sorry, excuse me. Light frequency analysis scan. What? Now, 2 kHz instead of 20. Did I write it wrong? Probably. Yeah, 10 is missing, sorry. Okay, 20 kHz. I am just cutting away above 20 kHz. So in this case, you look at your spectrogram and you see that above 20 kHz, the signal is falling down, but it's not going to zero abruptly because the filter takes some range, some frequency range for running down to zero, because here there was a 10th order sloping down low pass filter. At the Nyquist frequency, which is 24, you need to get enough attenuation. For getting enough attenuation, you should go down to at least 80 or 90 decibels below the signal which was here. And here you see it's not going down enough. For looking better to this effect, let me use a different test signal. Let me use a Dirac delta function. So we first generate a piece of silence, and then we zoom in and we bring just one sample to maximum value. In audition it's very nice, you can with your mouse attract one single value of one sample and bring it to full scale. Now the scale, let me scale between 0 and 1, which is usual. So this sample is now 1, all the other samples are 0. So what we have created this way is a Dirac delta function. What is those rippling which you see here? The samples are not oscillating. The sample, you look at, the samples are the squares. So the values which are stored in the computer are 0000001, 0000000. Nevertheless, audition show me this curve. What is this curve? It is called a sync function. A sync function is a band-limited Dirac delta. So it is inherently applying a low-pass filter at the Nyquist frequency. A low-pass filter at Nyquist frequency produces this oscillating signal instead of the... So the digital values are the square. But what audition thinks is the real signal is the curve. And he thinks that there is nothing above 48 kHz in this case. There is nothing above the Nyquist frequency. What happens to this signal when I apply my low pass filter at 20 kHz? Let me apply our 10th order 20 kHz low pass and see what's happened. What's happened is that now the signal is become asymmetric, and these are the true value. It's not anymore audition making this funny extrapolation. Now the real value of the sample are not 0, 0, 0 anymore. This is the impulse response of your low pass filter, because by definition what is the impulse response is what you get when you insert the Dirac delta function. You did feed your low pass filter with a Dirac delta function, so what you get is the impulse response of the low pass filter, which is quite long. It is 29, 30, perhaps more, perhaps 40 samples. So the effect of a low pass filter was to smear the signal in time. It's not sharp as it was before. If you have a very rapid sound, like pop, like an explosion, like when you clap your hand, with a very sharp attack, after passing through this filter, is not so sharp. It has become smoother, softer, slower, you could say, not so rapid to follow the transient. And remember, this filter is not enough as acting as an anti-aliasing filter, because if you look at the spectrum, here start cutting at 20 kHz. For being precise, at 20 kHz, it is at minus 3 decibel, because by definition, the cutoff frequency of a low pass filter is defined as the frequency where the signal has been reduced 3 decibel below the band pass. So the band pass, let's say, was at 0 decibel, at 20 kHz, you are at minus 3 below this value. Then it continues going down, but at 24 kHz, I try to place the cursor at 24 kHz, here, the attenuation, here is minus 88, and here it was minus 63. So it is just 25 decibels, the attenuation at the Nyquist frequency. It's not enough for avoiding aliasing. If there was a strong peak above this Nyquist frequency, above 24 kHz, it is going to be folded back inside the audible spectrum, causing aliasing. What does this mean? That you need to employ a much longer, a much steeper low-pass filter. For example, you need to increase the order to 40. Now, an order of 40, it is almost vertical, this line, okay? But what happens applying such a steep filter to your impulse? It becomes much longer in time domain. This steeper in frequency domain, the longer in time domain. Now your filter has a length of 120 samples, is much longer. So it is mirroring your signal in time much more than before. Let me see if now it is steep enough. Now, at 24 kHz, the attenuation is good, is minus 154 decibels, so the signal is almost gone. But the price you had to pay for this was to employ a filter which, in frequency domain, is nice and performs his job accurately, but in time domain, is severely smearing the signal in time, so this is not going to sound nice. And the smaller the frequency range in which you perform your anti-aliasing, the longer will be in time domain the impulse response of your filter. So now here we have learned one lesson. There is an interrelationship of what happens in frequency domain and what happens in time domain. Having something very peaky, very sloping in frequency domain becomes very long in time domain. If instead something is short, is packed in time domain, it will create a spectrum in frequency domain which cannot have strong slopes. It will be much more gentle in frequency domain. You cannot take the two things simultaneously. This is, in principle, the Heisenberg indetermination principle working for acoustics. So it doesn't only work for atomic particles, like the electron rotating around the nucleus of the atom. It works also in any kind of science. You cannot have both things simultaneously. A sharp filtering in frequency domain and a short structure in time domain. If it is sharp in frequency domain, it's long in time domain. This is not only true for a low-pass filter. It is true for any filter. So what we have learned here is a general lesson. You cannot do whatever you like in frequency domain because you have to pay an heavy price in time domain if you apply a filter which is too much sloping in frequency domain. Let's go on. So we have seen this common case and the trade-off due to different slope of the anti-aliasing filter, and the sound quality improved, excuse me. The boundary is given by half the sampling frequency, so the mirror where you bounce and come back.
Even if the frequency of sampling is very high in compared to the original sound frequency, do you have the same phenomenon again, no matter?
No, because if there is signal above the sampling, the half the sampling frequency, above the Nyquist frequency, even if you sample at 192 kHz, then the mirror frequency will be 96. But if you have signal at 188, which is 90 kHz above the sampling frequency, then it becomes 90 kHz or 88 kHz below the sampling, the Nyquist frequency, so it comes back at a few kHz, at 2, 3, 4 kHz. And it is a tone which was, for example, by a microwave oven at 200 kHz, but it falls back and it becomes audible. So the anti-aliasing filter is always required. Going up with the sampling frequency is only an apparent amelioration because it changed the problem to higher frequency. But if there is signal at such high frequency, you still have the problem. You need an anti-aliasing filter. Okay? This was not understood until very recently. In fact, when I started working in audio and acoustic, one of the better brand of equipment, of laboratory equipment, which is called National Instruments, a very well-known and renowned producer of data acquisition system, they were selling sound cards without anti-aliasing filter. And there were other famous maker of tape recorder, digital audio tape recorder, like Teac, which is another very famous brand, which did sell me a 4-channel recorder without anti-aliasing filter. I then complained with them and said, what are you selling me? The measurement comes out wrong. And they gave me exactly the same answer you are proposing now. They told me, oh, Mr. Farina, what's the problem? If you have a disturbing signal at 27 kHz, which was the typical one, the monitors I told you before, it was the typical tone, whenever you had a computer or a TV set, there was this 27 kHz tone. And they told me, oh, just increase the sampling frequency, so it comes within the Nyquist frequency and is not causing aliasing anymore. But that's true for that particular tone, but if then you get another at an higher frequency, you get the problem back again. You need an anti-aliasing filter. After year 2000, so 12 years ago, it was not so far in the past, finally everyone recognized that there must be an anti-aliasing filter. And after year 2K, there are no data acquisition system anymore being sold without being equipped of an anti-aliasing filter. But it is a quite recent understanding, this one. Okay? The previous approach was exactly that one. Okay, you have aliasing, increase the sampling frequency. But you never solve the problem this way. As you increase the sampling frequency, you just explore a wider frequency range where perhaps there is even more disturbing tones, particularly with more modern equipment. Again, thinking to the monitors, to the TV display. Okay, at the beginning, the resolution of the monitor was VGA, 640 by 480. As the screen resolution started to increase, the frequency of refresh of the electronic beam did increase too. So instead of being 27 kHz as before, it went to 35, then 50, then 70, then 90 kHz. So it was a continuous following of this, increasing the frequency without solving the problem actually. At the end, when those facts were understood, it was also understood that there is no real reason to going above 96 kHz. In the previous year, instead, some people did propose to increase the sampling frequency to the double 192, and in some cases to double again 384. But there is absolutely no meaning. What you need is a good anti-aliasing filter with a gentle slope, because if the slope of the anti-aliasing filter is too steep, then you make this ringing in time domain, which smear the transient, and that is not nice. Okay, we have seen the impulse response, we have seen how to measure the impulse response of a system, which is a room, in which we have a loudspeaker and a microphone, and we have seen this example. This is the convolution of the input signal X with the impulse response H, giving you the output signal Y. And this is linear processing. Everything is very nice and simple. Convolution is just the sum of multiplication, and this is also called FIR filtering, finite impulse response. You know that Americans love these three-letter acronyms. So, okay, we must survive with this. FIR filtering, okay, just the sum of n products. Very simple. But this is not, or better, was not in the past, the most widely used digital filtering structure. Because in the past, before some things did happen, which I will explain later, making this computation very fast, before this did happen, it was thought that having an impulse response of several thousand coefficients was computationally too heavy to be performed in real time. So, for real time digital signal processing, this very simple structure, FIR filtering, was not employed for the wrong assumption that this computation takes a lot of load on the processor, which is false with the proper algorithm, but was true at the beginning because the programmer were not able to program this operation efficiently. So another structure for making digital processing was invented, and that is called IIR, Infinite Impulse Response. The formula now is much more complex. The first part, if you just hide this part on the right for one moment, think that this one does not exist. If you stop with the first part of the formula, this one, then this is the FIR filtering. The same formula as before, because we have just to multiply n previous input sample x for the corresponding coefficient, which were here called the impulse response of your system. So this is again FIR. But now you add a second part of your filtering structure. Instead of only employing your input samples X, you also feed your filter with the previous output sample Y. So this is a filter with feedback, because the Y value being computed are sent back inside the filter itself at the next time step. Of course, while this summation starts from zero, so you start processing the current input sample, you cannot here start from zero because the current output sample has yet to be computed. So you start summing the previous n-1 output samples, multiply them for a number n-1 of secondary coefficient called B. This structure can become easily unstable. If the value of the B coefficients are too large, the output will become larger and larger and larger. It's exactly what happens if you place your microphone in front of your loudspeaker. I just show you. If I place this microphone here and start exciting the system, not only why, it should start this is feedback, because the output come back to the input, and the system self-excites itself, and it starts owing, like now. So this is what we want to avoid, of course. We need to design the coefficient of an IADR filter so that it remains stable whatever input signal arrives over the filter. The strategy, the math for computing the set of columns A and B, of vectors A and B, which define an IADR filter, are completely difficult. It needs a whole course, engineering course, of 6 credits, like the whole course of acoustics, just for learning the tricks of designing the coefficient of IADR filters. And in the past, students of telecommunication engineering or of electrical engineering did one or two courses devoted on this very tricky operation of defining the set of coefficients for designing an IADR filter which performs what you want. When first I did show you the scientific filter in Adobe Audition, that is an IADR filter. That very nice plugin makes a lot of complex computation for defining the coefficient of an IADR filter which performs those low pass, high pass, and so on filtering without becoming unstable, which is not so trivial, and that is done very carefully in that module of Adobe Audition. Okay? There are other tools similar for MATLAB. In MATLAB there is a filter design toolbox, is called, which makes exactly the same thing. You specify what you want your filter do, and it gives you the set of coefficients A and B doing what you want, doing the implementation of the filter. But there are textbooks of 300 pages about the theory for designing these coefficients. Okay. So, in the past, when engineers and programmers were not clever enough for performing efficiently FIR filtering, that was the rule. Why? Because for performing a given filtering, you need less coefficients. The number n here is the order of the filter. So, when in Audition I did write a 10th order filter, it did mean n equal 10. Okay, let's come back to Audition. When here I go filtering, did I close it? Yeah, I was stupid. So again, we generate our Dirac delta function. When we apply our filter to our signal, here I write 10. 10 means that I use 10 A coefficient and 9 B coefficient. Look here at the structure. N equal 10, B equal 9 minus 1, that is 9. N minus 1, that is 9. Okay? So with 19 coefficient, I perform carefully this low-pass filtering. If I did employ FIR filtering, how many coefficients do I need to keep for performing accurately this low-pass filter? I need to perform the filtering with 6, 64 or even more coefficient. Ok. Perhaps it's better to look. Ok. I zoom vertically for seeing whenever it becomes really zero here, from here to here. So in this case, I need only 64 coefficients. So the advantage of IIR over FIR doesn't look so large. But this was a filter at a very high frequency. Let me try a filter at a more common frequency. For example, 1 kHz. Order 10. Let me amplify for looking better at the result. Okay. Now our filter for going to zero require 1200 samples. Now it's much longer. The lower the low pass frequency I implement in my low pass filter, the longer will be the filter in time domain. It can become several thousand coefficients. Okay? In the past, when a FIR convolution was low, making a filter of several thousand coefficients with the simple FIR structure was considered, was evaluated to be too heavy for the available computational power of the cheap and weak computers or DSP of the past. Today, on one side, computers are much faster, and also single chip DSP, digital signal processing unit. But on the other hand, we have much more efficient partitioned convolution approach for doing this convolution efficiently, as we will see in the second hour. So nowadays is not needed anymore to employ IIR. IIR is a technology of the past. There is still people using that because there are old engineers which they did study more than 10 years ago. The crossing point between FIR technology and IIR, so the FIR started outperforming IIR in 2003, so 9 years ago. Again, it's not a lot of time ago. So everyone who did study his engineering course before that year, but in practice many other colleagues of me are still teaching to their students that IIR is more fast, because they don't know of the recent research of the last 6 or 7 years. So a lot of engineers are still trusting in the fact that for making a given filtering, IIR is computationally preferable. And they are still building equipment using IIR filter, which instead is not anymore the best choice. The best choice nowadays and in the future is to use FIR for everything. And using FIR has the additional advantage that it is very, very simple. As we will see in the second hour, it's very simple to design the coefficient for a given filtering with FIR. In 1 hour lesson, I can teach you how to compute the coefficient for an arbitrary FIR, while it takes 50 or more hours for teaching you how to compute those two columns of coefficient, which I am not even attempting to teach you, because I am not able, I must confess. I did not study such topics about computing these two columns of coefficient. I know there are textbooks, I own one of these textbooks, but they did never take the 100 hours required for learning this technology. And luckily enough, there will no need to spend such time in the future, because it is a technology of the past, and there is no need to make it again. Okay, last question, last point before stopping. We know about the FFT algorithm. We transform a block of coefficient in time domain into a block of frequency band in the spectrum domain. This is very efficient from a computational point of view, because modern processor, a hardware FFT, embedded in the core of the processor. So for such efficient processor, computing the FFT costs almost nothing. This is the important point to know. While in theory you need to make again a number of products and multiplication and summation for getting the FFT, if you make it by hand one operation after the other, it is low, but the fast Fourier transform implemented on modern computer is incredibly fast. The only trade-off you have to consider is the length of your block being analyzed, being FFT transformed. The longer the block, the narrower will be the frequency resolution. And this again is a fixed trade-off. If you perform a sequence of FFT analysis along the running signal of my voice, if you want to follow very quickly the variation of my voice in time, you need to use short FFT blocks. But if you use short FFT blocks, the frequency resolution will not be very narrow. On the opposite, if I make an FFT analysis with very long block, the frequency resolution will be very, very thin, very narrow, but the time response will be very slow. For looking at this, we use another program, which is called... is not here. It's here, Spectra Plus. Spectra Plus is an FFT spectrum analysis program. Very nice for doing this kind of applications. We make the visualization of both the signal in time domain and in frequency domain. Above we have the time domain, like in Adobe Audition or in Audacity, so you see the waveform, and here you see the spectrum. Let me start with a normal spectrum with logarithmic frequency axis and logarithmic amplitude axis. Okay, very simple. We now employ FFT blocks of 16 kilopoint mono, mode real time, run. Pa, pa, pa. This is my voice, okay? Above you see the time domain waveform in real time of my voice. Below you see the real time FFT spectrum of my voice. Now with a 16 kilopoint time block, the time block is long, almost 350 milliseconds, you see. If I choose a shorter block, for example 4 kilopoint, now in time domain I see a much shorter block. So the spectrum is now much more quick, following the variation of the sound, because the time resolution is smaller, but also the frequency resolution is smaller, so the bands become coarser. You don't see this yet, but if you reduce this in time domain a lot, now see how the spectrum has lost the tail. You see how simple is the spectrum, because now the values are wide bands in frequency domain. In time domain, instead, now only a very, very small portion of a few milliseconds is being analyzed, of just slightly above 1 millisecond. Only 64 points. On the opposite, if I use a very, very long time domain block, this time domain block is now 1.4 seconds, more or less. So the spectrum has an incredible resolution, but is now very slow. You see how it moves very slowly. So again, the lesson is the same as the beginning. Time resolution, very sharp time resolution, means very coarse frequency resolution. Very fine frequency resolution means a very long block in time domain, so you cannot follow quickly happening events because your analysis is averaged over a longer time. Okay? If I make a series of impulses, as in every block, in every time block, you always save one or two clicks, you get a spectrum which always contains one click. But if now I make this shorter, there is one spectrum which contains the click which jumps up, then it falls down again. You see, for one instant the spectrum comes up and then it falls down again. So I can follow, I can detect this error. It's clear? Okay, I think we can stop here.